Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is Lisa Graves, who is Executive Director of the Center for Media and Democracy and the publisher of alecexposed.org. She has served as a senior advisor in all three branches of the federal government, as Chief Counsel for Nominations on the Senate Judiciary Committee, and as Chief Deputy for the U.S. Courts, and as Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Justice Department. Welcome to Background Briefing, Lisa Graves.
Nice to be on, Ian. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you, Lisa. And given your work in the Justice Department, can you shed any light on one, why did Jeff Sessions settle this case for $6 million instead of $230 million? And on Wednesday, 17 Democratic congressmen on the House Judiciary Committee wrote to Sessions expressing their concern that the DOJ, quote, may have settled the case at a loss for the United States in order to obscure the underlying facts.
Well, I don't have any inside information from the Justice Department, but I do think that we are entitled to answers from Mr. Sessions himself about this case, and I really hope that that there will be answers, that he'll be forced to answer, that he'll be called up the Hill and he'll have to answer. I hope that the reporters keep asking him that question, because the American people have a right to know. They have a right to know why this case was settled, why it was basically settled for pennies on the dollar, and why it was settled in the time frame that was settled, as these concerns, deepening concerns about Russia and Russian entanglement with the Trump administration, with Trump and the Trump campaign, continue to deepen.
But the fact that the Republicans on the Judiciary Committee didn't sign off on the letters, do you think it's going to get buried in this partisanship that's just extraordinary, the lengths to which Republicans are twisting themselves in knots and blinding themselves to the obvious about what's happening with this dysfunctional and even criminal gang of family kleptocrats and incompetents that are just driving this country off the cliff?
Well, I mean, I'm astonished by the Republican members on the Hill and their continued action to put party loyalty ahead of loyalty to our nation. I think it's a very serious, very troubling situation that has arisen, this cult of personality around Trump, the effort to defend him, to turn a blind eye to extremely serious matters is quite frankly appalling. And you see it time and time again. I think this week you've seen a letter or statement by Senator Grassley, the Iowa Republican, who basically trying to lay blame at the Obama administration for whether the woman at issue in this particular situation with Donald Trump Jr. was let into the country and didn't register as a foreign agent. And so rather than actually investigate the underlying issues, actually investigate the real issues, or join in a bipartisan letter to Mr. Sessions asking him for a full disclosure of what happened as in this settlement of this particular other case that you mentioned, that's what Mr. Grassley is busy doing. And so we see this time and time again. We see Republicans basically dodging the real issues that our nation is facing, real issues that the intelligence community and the intelligence agencies have raised. And, for example, with regard to the evidence of Russia's intention and actions to tamper with the integrity of our election process. And so I, as a citizen of this country, am appalled that these Republican leaders, so-called leaders in Congress, continue to try to aid and abet Trump and the Trump administration and evade actually doing their duty to protect us, the American people, in this circumstance.
Well, you know what Grassley's planning to do? He's got a hearing, I think, coming up next week where, and the Republicans are trying to do this, they want to create the fiction that the Steele memo was actually created by Russian intelligence in order to discredit Donald Trump, so that it's an equal opportunity thing. It wasn't just that the Russians wanted to dig up dirt and hurt Hillary Clinton. They also dug up dirt and wanted to hurt Donald Trump. That's how they're trying to play it.
Yeah, I read that, Ian, and I have to say that one of the things that the advent of the Trump administration and these willing aiders and abettors on the Hill has revealed to me is that I lack the imagination necessary to really even understand the sorts of twists and turns, the gymnastics, the mental gymnastics that they are willing to engage in to try to distort public perception and public opinion. I can't even, I really couldn't even imagine that would be the course that this would take. If I had unlimited funds, which I don't, I would actually be spending time getting information out to every VFW meeting place in the country, every veterans association in the country, to say, please stand up and speak out. Do you not understand what these men in this administration, what this administration is doing in terms of our national security? I'm concerned that there's a portion of the American population that isn't getting actual information, real information about these crises, and instead is being spun. This sort of disinformation, just like you point out, this effort to try to twist this coming hearing into some sort of indictment of the Obama administration versus actually looking into what is on the surface here, which is the real story, which is this extraordinarily unprecedented effort by Putin and Russia to tip the scales, to put their thumb on the scales of our election, our sacred democratic trust. In essence, to install Trump in the White House.
So just going back to, the letter that we talked about that one Wednesday, 17 Democratic congressmen on the House Judiciary Committee wrote to Sessions expressing their concern that the DOJ, quote, may have settled the case at a loss for the United States in order to obscure the underlying facts. And that certainly seems to me to be something that we really need to find out about. But there's so much suspicion surrounding this because Preet Bharara, apparently Donald Trump had told the Manhattan U.S. attorney that he wanted to keep him on. And then he decided to fire him. And a lot of people believe that he fired all of the U.S. attorneys just to cover the fact that he really wanted to fire Preet Bharara. And then, then 2 days before this case went to trial, Sessions settles for pennies on the dollar. So what do you think happened here? I mean, it just looks so damn suspicious to me.
Well, it really does. You know, this question of the U.S. attorneys and the firing, it comes at an extraordinary point in our country in terms of having those offices not filled by a Senate-confirmed leader in those top prosecution offices in the various states and federal districts within the country. And obviously the news has come out a couple months ago that that Mr. Bharara was told by Trump that he was not going to be asked to resign his post. Typically, the U.S. attorneys who were appointed by a prior president will resign and they'll be replaced by other U.S. attorneys. But in this case, you had a circumstance in which Mr. Bharara was told he was not going to be one of those who would be asked to leave his position. And that happens sometimes from administration to administration. In fact, it's what's happened to the current Deputy Attorney General of the United States. He was appointed in one administration and stayed on into the next administration. And so in this case, I think it is suspicious, this timing, that the change in decision about getting rid of Bharara. And I think at this point, it's very difficult for any reasonable person to trust any of the explanations given by Mr. Trump or by his attorney general for why they do anything. There's been such a record, such a pattern of deceit, obstruction, of, not telling the truth, of not being forthcoming. In the case of Mr. Trump, I mean, it's basically happening on a daily basis, but even with Mr. Sessions. And so, the timing of his firing, I think, is very troubling. The circumstances of it as well, and especially with cases like this pending, there was also, some indication that Mr. Bharara was looking into other issues that might implicate the Trump company or Trump associates.
But then when you find, as our previous guest suggested, that the, perhaps this meeting with the Russian attorney, who was billed as a Russian government attorney, was, and that some of the research I'm doing now indicates that she may well be an intelligence officer with the SVR, the Foreign Intelligence Service of the Russian Federation, that she might well have been meeting with Donald Trump Jr., Jared, and Manafort as a way to establish the very back channel, the channel that they needed to transact all of this stolen stuff from the DNC, which eventually was dumped on WikiLeaks. But my sense is that if the Russians went to the trouble of stealing the DNC's mail and real-time communications of the head of Hillary's campaign, John Podesta, which is obviously, if you're reading the other side's mail in a competition, you've got a massive advantage. I believe that they were getting that stuff in real time, not that it was just dumped later on by WikiLeaks. So, and we know that that Jared went to the VNB bank to set up a back channel, and he met with the Russian ambassador, who couldn't believe that he was being asked to set up a secure private channel between the Trump campaign and the Kremlin. So it seems to me that the fact that you've got this case that this lawyer represented that was mysteriously settled by Sessions, and it's the same lawyer that looks as if she was the emissary from the Kremlin to set up a intelligence channel to feed the Trump campaign all the stolen stuff that the Russian intelligence had stolen from both the DNC and from John Podesta.
I mean, I have to say, you know, no one could really write this plot. I think Stephen King may have had some comments on it, sort of as a master of fiction, who would imagine this. But, you know, in this instance, as you point out, it is the same attorney, Natalia Veselnitskaya. And, you know, this is a situation in which it is clear on the surface of the emails, in the direct and plain language of the emails, that the meeting was described as part of Russia and its government support for Mr. Trump. It was described as providing incriminating information about Hillary Clinton to Donald Trump's son for the Trump campaign to use. And as many of your listeners know, Donald Trump Jr. responded by saying, "I love it. That's great. He can't wait to meet," basically. And he wants to make sure the timing of the release of the information is later in the summer to do maximum damage. And, you know, in this instance, you know, on the surface of it, just the plain language that was used, the purpose of the meeting is damning. Donald Trump Jr.'s response is damning. And it wasn't just his response. He used that solicitation to go to Paul Manafort, who was then the chairman of the campaign, the leader of the election campaign for Mr. Trump, to go to Mr. Manafort and go to Jared Kushner, the closest other advisor to Mr. Trump, and get them in a meeting with her. In the meantime, as this meeting is being set up, Mr. Trump himself is promising that you'll soon see incriminating information about Hillary Clinton. And shortly thereafter is actually when the first round of leaks from the DNC, the hacked emails from the DNC, start being put out into the public realm. And then later in the summer, as you know, is when Trump basically, in his own words, said it'd be great if the Russians would provide, you know, all the emails that were part of Hillary Clinton's server. And then if you fast forward, as you point out, to post-election, one of the very first things that Jared Kushner does is try to set up this so-called secure back channel through the Russian ambassador to the United States to communicate outside of the proper channels, outside of the channels of the White House, of the intelligence community of the United States of America, so that he can communicate and the Trump campaign can communicate with Russia on channels that are not actually secured from, you know, for the sake of the American people. They're secured from being listened to by our intelligence agency, because they would be provided by their intelligence agencies, Russia. And so, you know, between this and everything else we've seen, this isn't even getting into the whole issue of Mr. Flynn and everything else we've seen, it's damning. And quite frankly, I should add, you know, under U.S. campaign finance law, it is illegal to accept a donation from a foreign national. Sure. It certainly would be legal to accept a donation, a financial donation from the president of the Soviet Union, pardon me, a president of Russia, I should say. It would be illegal to accept a gift, of meaning something of value, meaning opposition research on your opponent would be illegal to accept. And yet that there's no hesitation by Donald Trump Jr. to take this meeting and pursue this.
Sure. Well, Lisa, I'm afraid we've run out of time, but I thank you very much for joining us here. And let's stay in touch, because I think you're right that the press, the Republicans aren't going to do anything, but the press have got to shame Sessions into letting us know why he settled this case.
Yep. Yes. Thank you, Ian. Thank you so much.
And again, I've been speaking with Lisa Graves, who's the Executive Director of the Center for Media and Democracy and the publisher of alecexposed.org. She served as a senior advisor in all three branches of the federal government, as chief counsel for nominations on the Senate Judiciary Committee, and as deputy chief for the U.S. courts, and as deputy assistant attorney general in the Justice Department. And we're going to take a brief station break and back, try to figure out why the new French President Emmanuel Macron is giving Donald Trump the red carpet treatment.